Okay, actually, I was going to bring four or five poems on jockstraps with me, but I didn't, and good thing I didn't, too. There are certain things that men know, not much, but about that much, that women don't, and it's wonderful to see those secrets sometimes, I think. What I'm going to do tonight is read some poems that I started working on last summer, poems that are dated and that are about different subjects that grew out of some automobile travel that I was doing then. I've been working on these since last summer. And I guess what I would say is the subjects of these things are various. The major thing that I feel about them is that the speaker, who's me, is letting his mind roam, as minds usually do, from one thing to another, just seeing where it goes. The first of these is June 20th, riding westward. Going home from Bennington, sunny for a change, not so humid. Lunch in Troy, New York, at the Country View Diner, where the waitress says, "Happy Father's Day," which seems odd. How does she know I'm a father? Happy Father's Day. And then I'm on the road again, leaving Troy, a piece of mechanical crap with New York plates riding my tail. Asshole! But he peels off before I hit 787. Tim and I had our usual friendly, unfriendly argument in front of the seminar. I argue for the heart, and he for his love of challenging poetry, which often means, I think, obscure, the speaker refusing to tell what he knows. I like complexity, not confusion. Plain surface texture, free of mere complicatedness. And remember what Marshall wrote 2,000 years ago at the grave of a five-year-old child. Earth weigh lightly on her slight bones, she whose footsteps barely touch the ground. June 26, Meyer Country Motel. Gunshots at 8 a.m. Oh, just pre-July 4th, rural Pennsylvanians clinging to their guns. How they hate Obama for that remark. They cling to their churches, too, but guns come first. Well, on to breakfast at the Milford Diner, where the fat Greek owner loves to chat up customers, while the waiter, who looks like the aged Bob Dylan, and the waitresses, who call you honey, and two Latino busboys do all the work. Who wants to work hard? We want to be the happy fat owner gabbing. Luckily, the Gideon Bible has some blank pages at the back, so I can write this down before I go. Incidentally, it's almost unfailingly true that if you stay in a not very good motel, there will be a Gideon Bible there. And late at night, when you have to write something down to remind yourself the next day of what you have to do, there it is. Diner. Beatles on the juke. Listening to the Beatles sing "Money Can't Buy Me Love" is like listening to Mother Teresa sing "Love for Sale" or T.S. Eliot doing "I've Gotta Be Me." And the Greek waiter here, who's not as young as he used to be either, is a dead ringer for the aging Bob Dylan, right down to black string tie, black vest, and 40s pencil line mustache. Strange what forms vanity takes, but probably because love's in the air. I remember Rick Waswo saying a very long time ago, "I'd like to make love to 1,000 women." "Fat chance, Rick," we said then. And now a little kid runs up and down the aisles and stumbles, so a large woman, his mother evidently, waddles up to comfort him, and a very pretty young woman in low riders also bends down to wipe his tears as Bob Dylan smiles appreciatively at her ass, above the crack of which is revealed the inevitable tattoo, which seems to be a cartoon chipmunk. Hotel California is not playing as I leave and back out my car, worried about a red Chevy very close to my rear. But some guy yells, "Don't worry, you got plenty of room, plenty of room." And I do. I think his help might be a good omen for us all. I used to be very secretive about my love life, which, compared to Rick's ambition, was only mezzo-mezzo. But I can tell you that as a young guy, my guiding principle was never hang out with anyone who thinks chipmunks are cute. July 16th, Hambone. Stephen Kate tells me that Hambone is Barrel House Blues slang for penis and is also used as a verb. Aaron Copland is at least as important to classical music as Hambone Willie Newburn is to the blues. And one March, I was sitting in a cabin at McDowell at the piano where Copland had Hamboned Appalachian Spring and was very pleased to be in his spectral presence as I one-fingered Yankee Doodle on the Baby Grand in a New England blizzard was dropping 2 feet of snow, while out of loneliness and creative impotence, I wondered how I was ever going to get a poem out of this. July 21st, Michael Waters. The Pennsylvania Lottery website is down, so I don't know whether I've won $76 million, half of which I promise I'll devote to the poor and other good causes. So while I'm waiting, I read selected poems which Mike Waters sent me and love the new Gaga love poems for his wife, Mahala, and reread the poems from his early books. The first was Fishlight from Ithaca House, the press started by my old teacher, the blessed Baxter Hathaway. Wonderful, the odd connections in our lives. And this morning, when all the news is about the debt ceiling and the lies that the country's gone bankrupt, there's Michael's old poem to an Indian, last seen floating down the Mississippi. July 27th, Ancient Music. Driving out of Pittsburgh, Brandenburg number 6 on FM. Bach sent it to the Margrave with his job application that was turned down. The music lost for 100 years. So much sweetness hidden. I heard it first at 18 in the college music room. I never listened much to classical. And now, scribbling this on the porch that overlooks the meadow, Verl mowed for hay before his early death, crushed by machine, I watch the gentle hills rising, wooded, and beyond them mountain upon mountain, and miles and years away the ocean, below the surf anemones and whelks, hidden, waving. On the shores of darkness, there is light. August 5th, family reunion. B&B, every room stuffed with antique dolls, Disney lunchboxes, tintypes, living room, precarious lamps, vases, teetering end tables, a minefield for little kids, keep them out of there. Breakfast okay, except for biscuits big as babies' heads covered with sausage gravy. Many jokes among the 20-somethings about planking, and as always, at these things, much talk about the rectitude and senility of the passed on parents whose religion consisted largely of smacking and scrubbing. And then my cousin William, the Ben Franklin reenactor, talks about the time he was in an LA hotel in colonial costume wearing a pair of glasses with false eyebrows and a penis for a nose. The hotel manager followed him around, said he must remove those glasses, that they weren't appropriate for the decorum of a Marriott. August 18th, sunflowers. The ornamental sunflowers aren't turning to face the sun as they're supposed to, but Brit's just seen, first time ever, a yellow-throated warbler. Yesterday, when Judith and I were talking about how to reduce our workloads, I saw a headline in the Times, 60 more Iraqis killed by bomb blasts. What's that now, 150,000 civilians? More than Hussein would have, could have. Strange contrast. You don't know where you will be, but you'd better know where you are. August 19th, market report. Another down day. Read, how I made $2 million between Christmas and Easter. First rule, lie a lot. Baron Rothschild gave the best advice. Buy when there's blood in the streets, but try to do it. If you have no money, money's the only important thing. That's how the boss gets you. If you have some money, there's 3,000 years of poems, music, art, not to mention food, Starbucks, and Cancun. For the old French, Versailles. For the old Romans, Capri and Pompeii. Plus nature, the murmuring pines and the hemlock. Still plenty of it around the ex-rainforests, the former mountaintops, the kaput coral reefs. First rule, everything's cool if you have endless exponential growth, which means another nature down day. And let me end with two poems outside of that sequence. One is called Steel City, which has an epigraph, change is the great subject of poetry. And speed, I would add. I envy the poets of New York, so many weird people to see and shops to name, restaurants in which to meet other poets and complain about overpriced borscht. And I am a New Yorker by birth, living in exile, not like Catullus, who was bitter about it, but in a city that boasts the original hot dog shop, the secret of its great fries, molten lard. Not too far from a real carousel with real little kids screaming for joy, not too far from where Maz hit the home run that beat the hated Yankees in 1960, and that not too far from the conservatory with a statue of Bobby Burns standing next to a plow whose handle, when viewed from a certain angle, looks remarkably like a giant crooked penis extending from Bobby Burns' knickers. A fact that has always allowed me to make jokes about the physiology of Scotsmen, who may be the only ethnic group not subject to PC constraints, perhaps because of antipathy to Andrew Carnegie, the evil Scot, who screwed the workers and then gave them a library as well as layers of black grime for all their buildings as well as their lungs, a coating still black as priests on the older structures as now teenagers make out on park benches after eating lard-infused fries. And the little kids on the carousel yell, more, more, to their sagging parents as endless automobiles circle looking to park and a flotilla of balloons, red, white, yellow, and green, this afternoon floats toward the Empyrean, powder blue above the clouds scudding before the tireless wind. And I'll end with this one, which is a newly published poem, which I like. It's called The Damnation of New Jersey. Uncle Frank despised it. Couldn't understand why some of our family lived there. Though to me, my Jersey cousins, George and Sybil, were exciting, mysterious, and gay. Frank hated Jersey drivers and ridiculed their towns. Nutley, Hohokus, Peapack, Bivalve and Hackensack, and had he lived, would have targeted the endless McMansion miles, the all we know of hell, strip malls. Ah, Mawa, Cheesequake, Piscataway, Secaucus, Tuckahoe, and Suckasuna. He told me that where the Giants now play football, giant pipes disgorged raw sewerage, and that the local farmers planted their tomatoes in the ooze. He did admit those were the best tomatoes he ever ate. What can I tell you? Frank was a plain man, a truck driver who loved me and was always kind. He never read poetry, and surely not Yeats. and would have been surprised to hear that love will pitch its tent in the very place of excrement. Thank you.